Hello, this is the Oz Media Report, back for another week. My name is Dan Barrett. Spotify unveiled a new product feature a fortnight ago that caught my attention. The streaming music service has been pushing aggressively into podcasting, and it's announced that podcast producers can now utilize the licensing deals it's negotiated to play songs during a broadcast. It's Spotify merging music and talk for its subscribers. You could be forgiven for thinking that this is starting to sound a lot like radio. Is this Spotify aggressively taking on radio, or is it an entirely new form? At launch, there's a couple of restrictions. Content creators have to host podcasts on a Spotify-owned hosting platform called Anchor. They need to have a substantial talk-to-music ratio, and you can't place advertising right up against the song. But beyond that, there's a wealth of interesting opportunities. This week on the Oz Media Report, I have a chat with James Cridland. When I first met James a few years ago, he billed himself as a radio futurologist. He advised radio stations across the globe on how to adapt and evolve to the shifts in the industry as listening habits change along with new technologies. This led him on a collision course with podcasting, and he's now seen as one of the leading authorities on the medium. From his office in Brisbane, he's the publisher of the podcasting industry Bible Pod News, which hits the email inboxes daily throughout the week of its subscribers. We talk through what the impact of music and podcasts on Spotify might be, and where podcast producers might want to focus as they embrace the potential. After that, I have a chat with a very different James, James Parkinson. He's the Melbourne-based host and producer of the Very Good Sports documentary podcast, By Association. If you've not listened to it, the show is kind of like 99% Invisible, but about football. He has a really great new podcast called Gameplay, which explores the history, form, and function of video games. Like By Association, it's really smart and entertaining. I talked to James about his podcasts, but I knew he'd have some thoughts on the new Spotify announcement, so we take a few minutes to talk through that. But first, Pod News' James Cridland talks to us about Spotify. So James, I was very keen to have a chat with you about this. I think you're in a very unique position where you've spent most of your career being someone who advises radio stations around the world as to what they should do and general consultancy work with them. But then also you've taken this sort of later part of your career where you focus on podcasts, and now you're the go-to guy to talk about podcasts in terms of consultancy. So you know radio, you know podcasts. Suddenly Spotify coming along, merging both mediums together in a really sort of interesting way. So I guess maybe the first question we should go with is this necessarily radio? Should I be looking at this as a radio replacement of sorts?
I mean, it's a kind of radio replacement if you're really interested in a lot of talk with your music. I think one of the things that's been interesting is looking at how people are wanting to use Anchor and Spotify's new shows with music thing is that they've had shows knocked back because they haven't contained enough talking. So there's clearly some form of licensing there. But it's great if you want to do a music documentary, if you want to, you know, talk about a particular song in a podcast and be able to actually play it on Spotify only, then it's a great tool for that sort of thing. Yeah.
So what's the actual restriction on it? So my understanding was it was 10 minutes of talk for what would be effectively a half hour program. Is that correct? Or am I off base?
I mean, they've not published all of that information. So they've published some information about advertising, and that's in there. You can have your own advertising in there, but it must be at least 10 minutes away from any song, and it can't be longer than such and such, and it can't be shorter than so and so. So there's all of that kind of thing. But then there is seemingly a approval process, and part of that approval process has been to a number of people, you're not talking enough, go away and talk a bit more. Which, of course, if you've worked in radio for any amount of time, is a really weird thing, because normally you're told you're talking far too much. Just play the hits, but I mean, I think, you know, the most important part of all of this is it only works in 6 different countries. It only works on Spotify, the app itself. It only works. You only hear the songs in full if your listener is a Spotify premium account holder, so is actually paying for the music anyway.
So otherwise you hear a snippet of the song, don't you? You don't necessarily hear the full thing.
Yeah, you hear a 30-second clip. If you want to do the whole thing, if you want to get your audience hearing the show that you are expecting to actually, you know, get out there, then that's quite a small amount of people. You know, the small percentage of Spotify users that are paying for it, that are in these individual countries and so on and so forth. So, you know, it's not necessarily something that would replace the ubiquity of, you know, FM AM radio right now. And certainly, you know, if you're looking at this in terms of podcasts, well, it's really nothing to do with podcasts. You still can't get commercial music into a podcast, which is available on all of the podcast apps. It's just purely a Spotify thing.
So it sounds like it's not a replacement of top 40 radio, but the niche area that I thought this actually maybe does fit into being a bit of a replacement for is if you think about, say, the strong, at least in Australia, the community radio sector, where you've got specialty music programs where they may play a song and then talk about the artist for some time and talk about, you know, technique of the song and actually really sort of build it out to being more than just a, let's play a whole bunch of music to you on the radio, but here's a lot more context. It seems like this actually fits into a really nice spot where your FM radio stations, your commercial stations aren't going to be affected, but I reckon the community stations may take a bit of a hit, because if I'm a person who's going to volunteer my time, why would I necessarily go through all the effort involved in community when suddenly I can just go on Spotify and have that same pleasure as being met?
I mean, I think there's something in that, although obviously a community radio station is a community of common interest, which also includes, you know, where people live and, you know, what people do. But, you know, I mean, as a great example of where this works really well, on the day that Spotify and Anchor announced Music with Shows, Sony Music Entertainment, who are a big record company that own a lot of music, launched a new podcast. And their podcast is called My 90s Playlist. And the initial podcast was, I think, 75 minutes long. And it was all about TLC's No Scrubs. yeah. And we heard 25 seconds of that song. Now, if you're doing more than an hour long about a song, it would be quite good to hear that song in full. So, you know, for music documentaries, for those sorts of shows, potentially for the sorts of shows that you sometimes hear on Double J and Triple J, then this is a great tool. And actually, it's better, if you like, than commercial radio or linear radio, in that you have a skip button. So if the person is talking a little bit too much about the middle eight in this particular song, then you can skip it. And you can go into hearing something else. So I think, you know, that on that side, there's something interesting there as well.
Is there a particular format that you think that maybe podcast producers should be looking towards? So you mentioned music documentaries, but a documentary, as we generally tend to think of it, is more really a snippet of it rather than analyzing like an entire song in full. If you think about most of the music docos, like what immediately came to your mind, I guess, as someone who's been playing around in both radio and podcasting for a while, as like an ideal format?
I mean, I think you can do some quite interesting music formats with this. So you can do those types of music shows where you dive deeply into the songs that you're actually playing. So Tom Webster, who's a really good researcher, he gave this a go and did a show called From Worst to Best or something similar, which was essentially a show connecting individual songs with individual artists, trying to get from a dreadful song, which was one of my favorites, which I was a bit sad about, to one of the songs that he considered to be one of the best songs in the world. And, you know, that 6 degrees of separation, that sort of thing. So, you know, there are certainly formats that you can do with this. Does it replace, Fitzy and Whipper in the morning? No, it doesn't. You know, that's a very different show. But does it replace the sorts of, quite muso shows, quite, music magazine type formats? Does it replace playlists as well? You know, playlists on Spotify are a big thing, and quite a lot of people have got very famous for running very popular playlists. But playlists up until now, of course, have just been music. So there's been no explanation of why this particular song deserves to be in this playlist right now. So actually, arguably, you could look at this and go, this is something for tastemakers who are producing Spotify playlists, who are producing who are talking about new music, talking about, that sort of tastemaking stuff. And this is a great vehicle for them to actually move a little bit further in terms of, you know, getting the reasons why they've chosen a particular song out there.
Okay, so before I move on to the next thing, I really need to backtrack here. You said that the Terrible song was one of your favorites. Come on, what was it?
We Built This City by Starship.
Oh God, I wish I hadn't asked you that. It's just embarrassing for you. Everyone feels bad for you right now.
Oh, sorry.
Okay.
It's just a piece of feel-good pop rock.
Oh gosh, I just can't even look you in the eyes anymore. So think about Spotify as a company. They've had strong investment in music, obviously. They've shifted towards podcasts quite dramatically over the last like 18 months now, I want to say. Podcasts are great for them because they don't really necessarily need to have financial agreements in place with the content holders in a way that you do with music licensing. But what about Spotify's long-term podcast aspirations? Are they looking at this as that first step towards merging and creating a more radio-like experience within Spotify? Clearly, they're working in license constraints here, but do you think this is something that they're going to try to shrink that amount of time that a person is required to talk against being music played? And how does that factor into the bigger picture?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Spotify are clearly very keen in eyeing the amount of revenue that radio makes, particularly in the US, and thinking, right, is there something there that we can get out of all of this? Are the benefits that we can actually grab? You know, out of focusing on the radio market, which is, you know, easily, you know, I mean, it's 100 times larger than the amount of money that you can get in terms of podcasts. So if you can actually get more of the revenue for radio coming into Spotify, then of course Spotify would be really pleased about that. And I think, you know, you can see individual tech companies who've always been interested in radio in some kind of way, in some shape or form. So Apple have launched a number of additional inverted commas radio stations over the last couple of months, and that's been really interesting to watch. Apple doing that. Sonos has its own set of radio stations now for their smart speakers that you can only get on Sonos, and so on and so forth. So there's clearly a move to get some of the benefits of radio in there. And it's obvious why. Apart from the revenue, there's also the other side that radio is a very habit-driven medium. So people listen to the radio every single day. That's great for advertising. But also radio is listened to by 9 out of 10 people. 9 out of 10 people here in Australia every single week. 9 out of 10 people in the US, Canada, the UK, and most of Europe. So, you know, radio is still very big, very large. And Spotify would clearly like to grab a bit of that.
So you mentioned Apple, and I'm really interested to see what Apple's response is to this. Do you think that they'll follow a similar path and allow podcasts to be able to feature music? Because obviously Apple have Apple Music as well, so they've got the licensing in place in the same way that Spotify does. But I guess maybe the distinct difference is that Spotify is more of a lockdown system where the podcasts are actually running through the Spotify ecosystem. Like, they're technically not hosted by Spotify, are they?
Yeah, so I mean, the way that Spotify works is Spotify is an app, and Spotify is an audio app, and it plays audio from a variety of different places, and that means that Spotify can lock that down. But most importantly, that means that Spotify can, they don't just know your IP address and your device that you're using when you listen to a podcast, they know who you are. They know that you're Dan Barrett. They know that you listen to Starship an awful lot. You know, they know all of this information about you.
Now so, everyone knows.
so, you know, you can see all of that stuff being very useful for advertisers as well. I mean, I looked at, you know, the people who are out there that have the rights to potentially do something that Spotify are doing, and you know, there's a bunch of people out there, but mainly it's Spotify, Amazon, Google actually has the music rights as well through their YouTube company, and then you've got Apple. Now, Apple historically has done nothing in terms of content. The first thing that Apple has started doing is Apple TV Plus, of course, where they've got a little bit of content in there, but not that much. But Apple have really not done an awful lot elsewhere, and they're certainly not particularly interested in advertising. There's clearly a difference there between Apple's plans and where Google or Deezer or Amazon might be going. And maybe they might come along and go, well, we could do this sort of thing as well. The difficulty with that, of course, is that you would then be, as a podcast producer, making at least three different versions, one for Apple or Deezer or whoever, one for Spotify, and then one for those people that can't hear the songs.
Yeah, horribly complicated for podcast producers. I'm thinking about the fact that Spotify have recently started playing around with video a little bit. So you can watch the Joe Rogan podcast, for example, through video. And there's a couple of other podcasts that have that functionality sort of built into it as well. And you can assume that eventually they'll open up to the third-party podcast producers broadly to be able to provide a video conversation of the very handsome James Cridlin and myself having this conversation right now. In theory, that could make its way over there. But then I think about Apple, who this week made the announcement that there's a 24-hour MTV-style music video channel that they're running through their Apple Music app. And I'm wondering, could Spotify maybe look at this as an opportunity to not just include video, not just include audio songs, but maybe also mix it into video? So instead of a person creating a radio type equivalent show, maybe they're creating a music video type program instead.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be really interesting. And I think, you know, I mean, Apple's MTV equivalent, or rather the original MTV, because it actually plays songs. Apple's original MTV equivalent is only available in the US. And my suspicion is that the music licensing and the video licensing is considerably more complicated. But you can also see that, you know, one of Spotify's main competitors is YouTube Music, which is launching kind of properly, to be honest, this week, because Google have finally, after 2 years of not caring about it, finally closed down Google Play Music, which has been their music app until this point. YouTube Music has real benefits to Google. And one of those benefits is that it's not just audio music, it's video music as well. So they have the benefits of all of their catalog there. And maybe Spotify might look at that and think, yeah, there's probably something that we should be competing against here. So, you know, whether or not they'll allow people to turn around and do, you know, a version of a music show, and be the new Adam Curry, you know, I'm not so sure, but it'll be interesting to keep a watching brief on that.
So the industry itself, have you heard any sort of a response of significance to the announcement by Spotify that they are playing around with music and podcasts and merging them together? Like, are people concerned about this, or is this still a distant concern?
I don't think that, you know, I mean, certainly the people who I've been talking to have been saying it's not podcasts, and it's very unlikely to replace radio. So it's another feature in Spotify's ecosystem. But, you know, Spotify is interesting. If you look at the numbers, then Spotify is only 10% of all podcast downloads. And so you look at that and you think, well, that's not too big. When you look at people using it, though, Spotify and Apple are rather closer. So Apple has about a third of all Americans who use Apple podcasts. Spotify has a quarter of all Americans who use Spotify for podcasts. So they're quite similar and quite close now already. So it'll be interesting seeing what happens there. But at the moment, most of the podcast hosts are saying it's not really podcasts. But also it's not really something that they can compete with. The real benefit would be if the record companies got together and actually helped podcasters license music for shows. And that is a hugely difficult thing. There was an announcement a year and a half ago by one company that said that they'd got the agreements and it was all going to be launched by Christmas. And that was last year. And we're still waiting for that to actually happen. It's a particularly confusing thing. And I think, you know, the regional differences in music licensing have meant that, you know, music is really hard in terms of ordinary RSS delivered downloadable podcasts. And if this is one way to get in through the back door and make shows with music, then that's a fantastic thing. But it's not really podcasting.
What about the response from the radio industry? Because I'm picturing a scenario where you got people say, like, maybe a Hamish and Andy, both of them really quite wealthy, both of them maybe can, they've got enough money where they don't necessarily need to sign the next radio contract. But if they want to maintain a relationship with their fans, they've got their podcast, but maybe the rules around Spotify change a little bit to allow a bit more music to be played there. Like, what's for them to say, look, we're not going to do radio anymore, but we've got this program that's there as a podcast that we own and operate. That's exactly the same experience as what you're getting on the radio. Like, surely the radio industry should be very concerned about that kind of scenario.
I mean, the radio industry, I mean, it's interesting having a look at Hamish and Andy, because, of course, that podcast goes out on Southern Cross Stereo. It's their yeah. thing. But yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, I think the wider conversation here is music. Because music used to be a very scarce thing. People used to listen to the radio to hear new songs, to get connected with the artists that they were a massive fan of. You know, and I remember when I was on the radio many, many years ago, you know, I mean, I had, you know, Tony from E17 ringing up from the tour bus, and this was very exciting on my show, you know, and people were yeah. were thrilled to hear what Tony from E17 was doing. Now, that's all fine. Now, if you want to find out what Tony from E17 is doing, you follow him on Twitter or on Instagram or on TikTok or goodness knows what else. Not him exactly, but you know what I mean. So music itself isn't the thing anymore, I don't think, for radio. I think where radio needs to focus is on speech, is on the bits in between those songs, if you're a music station. The amount of speech listening has increased dramatically over the last 6 years in the US. The amount of speech that we listen to has gone up by 30%. So that's a large, large number. And all
is this music for? Sorry, is that music format stations that are embracing speech more? Is this the rise of satellite radio where you've got more personalities, or is this just that there's more talk generally, like more talk stations?
I think you know, it's partially more talk stations. It's partially the rise of podcasts, and the fact that podcasts can't have music in there has meant that young people, particularly, that's people under 35, and I'm sure that we both remember those days, young people are listening to an awful lot more speech radio and speech audio than they ever have done in the past. And I think that's interesting because, you know, again, if I want to listen to 10 great songs in a row, I'm not going to listen to a radio station for that. Why would I do that when I've got Spotify or YouTube Music or Apple Music or whatever it is in front of me? So radio's unique selling point now is that human connection and that shared experience. That's what radio can really benefit from. And it's something that up until Spotify's announcement, something that really has not been available anywhere else. That shared experience, that human connection, while still, you know, potentially playing some songs as well. So, you know, I think radio should be focusing on making sure that they use the benefits that they have, you know, that human connection and that shared experience as much as they possibly can. And that means that, you know, for Hamish and Andy to all of a sudden add music to their podcast, I don't really understand what that offers. I don't really understand why that makes a better show. A better experience. It might have been what they used to do on B105, but frankly, you know, we've all moved on from that. If you want to hear songs, then why should I listen to what Hamish and Andy want to play me?
You've asked a lot of questions for me. You've left me with one big question, which is, what is Tony from E17 doing right now? But I'm going to go off and research that. James Cridlam, thanks so much for your time.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
I'm a big fan of podcasting as a medium for a number of reasons. The big one is that there's an intimacy that a listener develops with a podcast. It's not hugely dissimilar to the intimacy that radio listeners have with a talkback host that they've been listening to for a few years. But because a podcast is usually a bit more niche in topic focus, it's more personal. It's a more personal experience. The other thing is that I really like how malleable the format is. Personally, I mostly like panel chat podcasts, but documentary-style storytelling podcasts are just as valid a form of podcast. One of the more interesting producers specializing in storytelling podcasts is Melbourne producer James Parkinson. He's best known for his football series By Association, but he also has a new show he's working on called Gameplay, which explores video games and a virtual world that power culture and community. James, congratulations on the new podcast. It's really great.
Thanks, Dan.
Yeah, look, hey, let's talk about the new podcast. When I heard you were doing the new pod, I heard it was about video games, and my first thought was, another one? But listening to it, the podcast is actually really engaging, and it really feels like it's got a distinct purpose for existing. So I guess the big question is, why video games? And were you concerned about it being a bit of an overexposed subject matter?
I wasn't concerned at all. So I have been playing video games my entire life.
Yeah.
For me, it started with the Atari 2600 back in the day, and the Super Nintendo, and the original Game Boy, and you know, it just kind of went on from there. So I've always played games. They've been a big part of my childhood and growing up, and that's continued on into adulthood. You know, games are for people of all ages, and given the rich history and a lot of people that have grown up with games, you know, that trend continues on as people get older, and it really, you know, covers, you know, so many generations. So, you know, games have always been something that I've really loved and enjoyed. And I, you know, wanted to do something in that realm. It started when we first went into lockdown here in Melbourne back around Easter time. And there was a lot of uncertainty around, you know, what the future looked like and what was going to happen and how that was going to impact, you know, work and things like that. And I was playing a lot of games because we couldn't go out anywhere and just, you know, bunkering down at home. And I thought, well, I'd love to do a show where I can get into the details of video game history and culture. And it kind of, yeah, went on from there. So the show is from Lawson Media, and who I work for. And I pitched the show to my colleague, Chris, who's our CEO as well. And he said, well, let's run with it. So we had the time and the need to, or the ability to, you know, take our time with it and develop something. So we spent about 5 months, and, you know, I put a brief together and kind of started developing it out, what this show was going to be and what it was going to involve. And so it went on from there. And in terms of, you know, where it sits in the podcast space and the gaming community, there's not a lot out there. There's a lot of shows that have done their own kind of, you know, single episodes about gaming stories. 99% Invisible is one that's done a couple of episodes and featured episodes from other shows as well. But there's not many that do this kind of stuff, you know, on a frequent basis and a dedicated show in a documentary storytelling style. So I wasn't concerned at all, because I felt there was a real gap there in terms of a dedicated show that's consistent and putting out, you know, really in-depth stories about gaming history and culture. So it's a gap that we're trying to fill, and the feedback so far has been, you know, really positive.
Yeah, so I really like the first episode where you're talking about the form factor of the ergonomics of gaming. So the construction of remote controls, or the video game controllers, and how that changed depending on what the company was. And it's a really good deep dive in Nintendo and how they settled on the, what they call the D-pad on a remote on a video controller. So like the little cross that exists really on your controller as you're moving up, down, left, right. And it was fascinating. I'd never really heard the perspective on that.
It's a pretty well-known story, actually, in a lot of kind of gaming circles. A lot of people do know the origins. If you've ever read, you know, detailed books about the history of Nintendo and just video games in general, how they kind of boomed out in the 80s. But then equally, there are a lot of people who may not have heard that story before, or may have not have known all of the details. And I think with that episode in particular, we bring a slightly different or a new slant to it. And we look at ergonomics in general for video game controllers and how the D-pad itself has kind of become a constant in gaming controllers. So we kind of brought two elements together, not just the history aspect, but also, you know, what makes a good gaming controller and why companies have gone with certain designs, why some have been received better and others not so much. So yeah, it was a really cool story to start off with, I think. And, you know, I wanted the first episode to be relatable to as many people as possible. You know, our primary audience is gamers, and secondary audience, you know, anyone who's interested in history and culture and pop culture. So it was a great one to start off with in that it was relatable, and it's a really kind of fun story and has, you know, a lot of those really fascinating elements to it. Gunpei Yokoi was the guy who designed the D-pad, or the directional pad. And he himself is a really fascinating character and has, you know, a really cool history in terms of his involvement in Nintendo as a company and his personal design philosophy, which became a real mainstay in Nintendo and helped, you know, guide them going forward in the video game industry.
Yeah. Now, the other podcast that I know you for is a previous show you were doing, and I don't know if you're still working on it. It was called By Association, and I guess it's kind of like gaming, but it's sports, and it was the culture of surrounding sports. It felt very much like the sort of podcast that I really wish SBS were putting out. Like, just because it's talking about like that cultural aspect across very sort of, it's a very multinational, multilingual kind of a experience because it's traditional football. So there's a strong European flavor through it all.
Yeah, look, by association has not ended. It's still alive. It's on pause for now. Before the lockdown hit with the global pandemic, I was kind of in pre-production on another season of that show and had, you know, a bunch of story ideas and was locking in pre-interviews with people and trying to get that together of what that next season was going to look like and the stories that I was going to be chasing. But since then it's, it's been put on hold and everything with work and gameplay has kind of taken over as my priority for now. By association is an independent show completely. It's just me. And there's, you know, no other kind of structure around it. So that is difficult in a lot of ways in that, you know, my day-to-day time is now focused on gameplay and other responsibilities at Lawson Media. So that has kind of taken a back seat for now. But really, you know, if I wanted to, I could kick it, you know, start it back up again. And, you know, just do all the interviews over Zoom or what have you. But the nature of that show in particular and the kind of show that I want to make is, you know, telling amazing stories about football in that intimate way and bringing, you know, the kind of craft around it in terms of the storytelling elements, you know, very similar to gameplay. The difference is there in that my time on By Association is not paid. It's, you know, it's a hobby still. So that's one element. And also, you know, it's very difficult during the pandemic at the moment to go out and, you know, do interviews in person if they're local or, you know, perhaps send a local producer to go and record someone in person if they're interstate or overseas, which I've done before and, you know, put my own money towards doing that just to get really high audio quality. And I want the show to kind of have a certain standard and maintain that standard that I've kind of set for myself. And really kind of set the bar high because with that show, I'm only doing, you know, 5 episodes or so per season. So if it is limited in terms of its release, I want every episode to sound amazing and to be really high quality and not settle for stories that maybe aren't as impactful. So I could definitely do it in a more budget friendly way and kind of scale it back. But it's something I'm not willing to compromise on. So for now it is, it's sitting on hold. I've had people, you know, DMing me and messaging me on Twitter and saying, you know, when's it coming back? It's absolutely something I intend to get back to. But for now it's just sitting there. So, we'll see. But, when it was going, it was, you know, it was doing really well. It was getting some good engagement from people and people were valuing the angle that I was taking with football stories and sports stories. A couple of those featured on NPR as well. And the feedback was really great because a lot of the coverage online in terms of podcasts and things around the sport, you know, tend to be that kind of chit-chat style, which is fine. But similar to gameplay, I'm coming at it with a different angle and a different perspective.
In thinking about the two different podcasts, as you said, one's independent, one's going through the company that you work for, Lawson Media. Obviously, there's different business considerations with both. You've got a subscription model in place for the video game podcast. Why go that route instead of straight advertising? And how do you feel about that model compared to, say, By Association, which you're really funding in a different way entirely?
Yeah. So By Association is basically funding, you know, self-funding myself, you know, keeping the seasons and episodes limited and, you know, putting as much or as little as I can into it just to kind of reach that quality level that I want to. So I think the last season I probably spent, you know, a couple of grand of my own money into that 5 episodes, just getting, you know, people to record interviews for me and things like that. With gameplay, yes, we do have a membership model because within the gaming community, there's a real history there of people supporting really high quality content. You look at YouTubers, streamers, you know, there's a lot of amazing creatives in the gaming space, and people are very very into supporting those creators. So there's kind of a precedent that's been set there. And there's a real community aspect in that regard that's already set in place. So people are really passionate about supporting amazing creators. So there's that kind of cultural element that is kind of already kind of set in stone. And people are open and responsive to that kind of model. So we've gone with the membership model, but we are also not rejecting sponsorship from brands and things. So we are actively looking for sponsors at the moment to supplement the membership element. So it will end up being a combination of ad supported and listener supported as well. We'd rather the listener support to be, you know, the majority. But, you know, it's just the way it goes at the moment. It is difficult to kind of, you know, you're still trying to build an audience from the ground up. So we don't have, you know, a whole bunch of members from the start, but we have had people sign up in the first couple of weeks, which has been really positive and just shows that people are valuing what we're doing. So yeah, it's a two-pronged approach. And we'll see how it goes. But in order to do, you know, real high quality documentary storytelling on an ongoing basis, you need to have, you know, kind of a solid foundation and to cover all those gaps. So sometimes, you know, sponsorship money isn't going to be there. For example, at the start of the pandemic, we lost sponsors on some of our other shows. So there are periods during the year where sometimes it's slower or it drops off completely. And that just happens. That's you know, the nature of advertising. So in those periods, the idea is that the membership can still be a continuing thing and listeners are helping to keep the show going. So that's kind of the approach there. And for members that do sign up, they get an ad-free feed. So basically you never get ads on the show. So once we do start locking in sponsors and those kind of deals, it will mean that it won't impact your listening experience if you want to support the show. So a two-pronged approach. And I think hopefully in the long term, it's going to work out really well for us in making it a sustainable show. That's really the key there. We want it to be sustainable because it takes a lot of time and a lot of effort to craft this kind of show and keep it ongoing. And we're a small team at Lawson Media. There's only three of us. And we want to make this a long-term thing.
Now, from having chatted to you a couple of times in real life, one of the things I've really enjoyed talking to you about is that we both come to podcasts with very different philosophies in mind when it comes to the medium. I'd say, and as evidenced by the way that you were talking about creating your podcast and the level of depth and skill that you went into on a production basis, like I'd say that you're a lot more of an artist when it comes to podcasting.
Sure.
Me, myself, I'm a slicing and dicing kind of a guy. I'm a cowboy who plays with a down and dirty panel podcast chat space. And we're coming at things in a entirely different way. And I don't really mind seeing large companies get involved because I think that opens up podcasting to entirely different types of forms and mediums that suit the way that I approach podcasting. But I appreciate that's also not the way that you approach podcasting. And with those very broad statements in mind, I was kind of curious to hear your thoughts about companies like Spotify. And there's the news, and we were just talking about it with James Cridland on the podcast in just a few minutes ago. But Spotify now merging podcast audio with music playlists. And I was wondering for you, like, could you ever see that as being something that you'd be interested in as a program maker? And what are your broader thoughts on the idea of Spotify really sort of playing with the podcast form and corrupting it in a way?
Yeah, look, it's interesting. I wouldn't say that Spotify are corrupting anything, but I think they are, you know, coming into the space in a really aggressive way. We've seen that with the amount of money that they've spent in the industry. And I think there are positives and negatives for it. As an independent creator, you know, first, I really value, you know, being independent, you know, either as myself as an individual creator or Lawson Media as an independent media company. You know, and there's lots to be said for that kind of approach. And that's where I've come from. So I'm always going to support an ecosystem that supports independent creators. And what is good for independence is good for the wider industry. Equally, I would say that, you know, as a creator who wants to do this for a living and is doing it for a living at the moment, we need more money in the industry. We need more opportunities. for a wide range of creators. And so when you have someone like Spotify who is willing to invest in creators and say, hey, you know, give us your show ideas, pitch us an idea, and we could potentially fund it. So I'm really open, in fact, and myself and Lawson Media as a company are really open to working with companies like Spotify to make, you know, a short run series, for example, or even an ongoing show that is exclusive to Spotify, you know, a Spotify original, as they're called. We're open to that partnership. But equally, we're also, you know, all about making our own editorial shows that we have complete control of. But it really varies on what the show is and what the end goal for the show is. Some shows might really suit that model to be a Spotify exclusive. If you want to make a really great music show that is about getting in depth on music, then Spotify might be a really great place to partner with because they have that amazing library and you don't have to worry about music licenses. They've got all that sorted for you. So in that regard, we're open to, you know, thinking about ideas. And, you know, if we have a concept that we want to pitch, we might ship it around to a couple of different places and see if there's interest there and see what the best place and the best fit for that particular show, whatever it might be, what the best place is for that. When we started Gameplay, you know, we kind of floated the idea, like, could we pitch this to other companies for them to fund it? But then we reconsidered because, we kind of decided that, you know, with the kind of show that Gameplay is, you know, it is about community. We want to build a community around the show, and the gaming community, you know, wouldn't necessarily respond to that kind of show. So it has more of a grassroots flavor to it. But yeah, another example, if we did want to make a really, you know, high quality show around the music and that was beneficial to pitch it to Spotify and if they were interested, then that would be, you know, great. There's a show that's a Spotify exclusive called Dissect, which started as an independent show and then Spotify acquired that show. And that was even before they even acquired Gimlet. So that was when they just started to get into putting podcasts on Spotify. So they hadn't quite spent as much money and things are very different. So those relationships and those kind of scenarios are kind of, it's a case-by-case basis. But the whole music aspect, I think, is really interesting. For independent creators, I wouldn't recommend it. As an independent, you want your show to be available in every potential place, every possible directory. And if you are using the music integration, you need to host on Anchor. And if you're using commercial music from Spotify, so my understanding is that Anchor, you know, will talk to Spotify and you'll have access to that music. And I think subscribers to Spotify, premium subscribers, will get the full length of whatever the music is that you insert into your show. And then non-subscribers will get at least 30 seconds, I think. I'm not sure how that works in a production angle in terms of how you kind of build your show. But Anchor is a very different platform as well. So if you're an independent and you're serious about, you know, creating an amazing show and, you know, maybe bringing on sponsorship and ads and things down the line, but you want to build something from the ground up, you want to be in every place that's possible. You want to be available everywhere that your listeners could be. And so if you want to use this potential option to put commercial music in your show, that means it can't be distributed to Apple Podcasts and Pocket Casts and Stitcher. It can only be submitted to all those episodes that include music can only be available on Spotify, and you have to host through Anchor.
Yeah.
So there's limitations there. I would not recommend it for independent creatives that are actually really serious about making a great show and wanting to build an audience, because you need to be everywhere. But if you are just, you know, a super hobby kind of podcaster and you've never done it before, you just want to try it out, you want to jump in, and yeah, you want to have Thunderstruck by AC/DC as your intro music, then, yeah, hosting with Anchor and you and your mate just kind of talking about movies or whatever you're into and having your favorite song as your intro track, and, you know, host it on Anchor for free. You can use that music without any other licenses. You have that freedom. Then great. That's fine. But if you are serious about growing your show, then you need to be everywhere. And this, you know, integration is not really built for that.
Yeah, I think you're right in talking about it being very good for hobbyists. If you are entering this with the idea of Thunderstruck as your theme song, I don't think you can actually do that. I think you need to have quite a few minutes worth of talk before you can reach the song being played. So there's definitely some creative constrictions there. But you're right. I think for anyone who wants to get involved in podcasting seriously, this probably isn't necessarily the best way to go, at least in the current state of podcasting. But obviously, this is the beginning phase. Spotify will end up adapting and evolving this platform in all sorts of ways.
Certainly.
Don't quite expect just yet. But I was really sort of curious from you in terms of platforms like Spotify. Obviously, there's a limited number of podcast platforms really nowadays, and that's going to shrink more of that. People like Apple Podcasts and Spotify really take control of the market. Increasingly, you're going to find Spotify is certainly doing this already. Amazon, as they start entering the podcast space, are getting involved in this, and Apple Podcasts will be following along. The idea of exclusive podcasts, the fact that you can't get these podcasts outside of their specific walled-off platform. And I was wondering for you, like, how comfortable are you as a bit more of a podcast purist about the idea that there's some podcasts that you just can't listen to because you're not paying the right $14.95 a month?
Yeah, it's an interesting debate that's been going on for a little while now in the podcast industry. And I'm not entirely against it. I think it really depends. I am for an open ecosystem. I love the open nature of podcasting. I'm a big fan of Pocket Casts as an app and, you know, as a company and their mentality in terms of really supporting that open ecosystem and not locking things down. They've been really supportive of independent creators as well, which I think is really, really great. And in terms of having exclusive shows, again, I think it is just about, it depends on the show. It depends on the project. You know, I see it similar to, say, a comedian that wants to get a TV show made and they have an idea for, you know, a limited run series of, you know, 10 episodes and it's about them and their friends and whatever it may be. And they might shop it around to Amazon Video and they might go to Netflix. And then that might get rejected by both of those. And then Hulu picks it up and they commission that and they produce it and they make it. And it's only available on Hulu as an exclusive. And if you want to, you know, get your subscription for a month to watch it, and then that's it. And that's great. So I see the podcasts that are happening now in terms of exclusive ones, like Spotify originals, like Audible shows, I see that as a similar thing. So me as an independent and, you know, I've done a lot of freelance stuff. If I'm a freelancer and I have a great idea for a show, but I actually can't fund it myself and I don't have an audience because I'm not a celebrity with a following already and I can't, and, you know, getting that kind of listener support is really hard from the start, then I might pitch that to a company like that. And if they really love it and they want to fund it and it gets made, then great. Because I think supporting creators to do what they do and make great shows is something that's really, really worth the effort and the time to support art and support creative projects. I see it similar to you know, funding grants and things, because in a lot of those cases, someone might have a great idea for a show, but they can't afford to actually, you know, make it happen themselves. If it's a really ambitious kind of project, a free, you know, in-depth audio documentary, that's really hard to do on their own without that kind of funding. So if they can go to places and get that support to make it, then great, because otherwise that kind of show might not exist if they can't afford to do it. So I think these options and money, more money flowing into the space is a really positive thing. But again, it just depends on the project. So, you know, we didn't take Gameplay anywhere else. We decided to do it in-house as a complete editorial show because of the kind of show it is and the kind of control we want over the listening experience. And we didn't want it to be a short run, limited thing of 10 episodes and you go and listen to it and then that's it. And yeah, you might get a second season out of it or whatever, but it's a different approach. For us, it's an ongoing show. But again, if we wanted to make something a bit different, there was a short run series and Sabi wanted to partner up with a celebrity or someone like that to be a really cool host. And it was different then. Yeah, I think that's a still a worthy thing to do. And, you know, companies like Audible and Spotify, you know, commissioning those kind of big projects are great for independents, and they're also great for independent media companies like Lawson Media.
James, that's probably a great place to wrap things up. Let's do a couple of quick plugs.
Sure.
The current project is called Gameplay, which you can find on all major podcasting apps. How many episodes for the season?
So it'll be ongoing every 2 weeks. So yeah, we have content locked in until the end of January at the moment and hoping to continue on that through 2021. So yeah.
That's fantastic. So if you're listening to the podcast, you're enjoying it, get a membership that keeps the show going. Lawson Media is obviously the company that's producing it, and you can find them both online and on Twitter. Speaking of Twitter, whereabouts are you, James? Let's give that plug.
Yeah, I'm at James R. Parkinson, and Gameplay, Gameplay Podcast and gameplay.co is the website.
Yeah, James, I'm loving the podcast. Keep up the great work, and thanks for participating in the Oz Media Report podcast.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
That's the Oz Media Report for another week. As always, thank you for listening. It's really great knowing there's people out there as interested in these subjects as I am. We've just got to wind this out with a little bit of business. First up, eager listeners may have noticed that we skipped a week last week. Unfortunately, life got in the way. What that does mean, though, is that I'm able to play around with the release day that I do this, and I'm shifting it from Thursdays to Tuesdays, and I'm going to try to keep that up going forward. Also, every weekday morning, I publish a free email called Always Be Watching. It gives readers approximately 10 interesting news stories that's related to TV and the other things that we watch on our screens. You can subscribe to that for free at alwaysbewatching.com. Finally, and maybe most importantly, you can find me on Twitter. I've got a lot of very important things to say. You can find me there at TheDanBarrett. Now, if you enjoyed this podcast, it would be very beneficial to its long-term future if you could leave a review or hit the share button, tell your friends and colleagues about it via email or social media. The more we grow the podcast, the longer it sticks around. The Oz Media Report, it's a production of Televised Revolution. And that's it for me for the week. Let's chat again soon.